about genetic screening. My team, the Utopians, are pro genetic screening. My name is Courtney Benson, and we have Cheryl Christie.
Hello.
Greg Finotti.
Hi.
And Ashley Williamson.
Hi.
We are not only going to prove through scientific facts that genetic screening is beneficial, but we will also prove our side by the laws of nature dictated by the mathematics of physics. Now I will turn it over to our opposing team.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Anthony. We are the Incredibles. I'm the captain, and we have Jeremy Neal, Sasha Spadoni,
hello,
and Thomas Farrell. We are debating the negative side of genetic screening.
All right. Hey, did you guys know that any two unrelated people are 99.9% genetically identical? It's true.
Wow.
BioLine International discusses this project. The Human Genome Project discovered this while deciphering the human genetic code. The Human Genome Project was initiated as a multinational project to determine the entire sequence and develop the genetic and physical maps of the entire human genome. The Human Genome Project was designed with a number of major goals in mind: to unravel the entire human DNA sequence and to make the data accessible to the public and scientific community, to develop efficient technology to sequence human DNA, to identify the variations in the genetic code of humans that predispose to different diseases, particularly the single nucleotide polymorphisms that are responsible for inter-individual differences, to understand how specific genes and or groups of genes interact exclusively or with some environmental factors to determine predisposition of individuals to disease or good health, to also decipher the genetic code of some model organisms like yeast and roundworms and the fruit flies, which is expected to facilitate the understanding of gene functions in a more complex genome like that of humans, to identify the ethical, legal, and social implications of genome research and other obstacles that would be overcome before the results of the Human Genome Project can be successfully integrated into medical practice, to develop bioinformatics tools and manpower to facilitate the gathering, analysis, and subsequent storage of the increasing amounts of sequence data that will arise from the project. Following the completion of the Human Genome Project, it would be possible to identify and distinguish individuals who can metabolize a drug rapidly from those who metabolize it slowly or who do not metabolize it at all, and to distinguish those who show an adverse reaction to a drug from those who do not. The identification of a mutation serves as a very reliable predictor of disease, and the diagnosis of the multifactorial diseases where the detection of a mutation can only predict an increased or reduced susceptibility to a particular disorder. One way genetic screening is used is by determining whether a couple is at an increased risk of having a baby with a hereditary genetic disorder or not. To determine whether having a baby with a genetic disorder is likely, doctors ask the couple about disorders that family members have had and about the cause of death in family members. Information about three generations is usually needed. Doctors also ask about the health of all living first-degree relatives and second-degree relatives. Information about miscarriages, stillborn babies, or babies who have died soon after birth is also helpful, as information about intermarriages among relatives and ethnic backgrounds. Counseling is recommended when one or both partners know they have a genetic disorder. Carrier screening involves determining whether a prospective parent who does not have symptoms of a particular disorder has a gene for that disorder, also known as a recessive gene. The chance of a baby receiving an abnormal recessive gene from each parent is 1 in 4 for each pregnancy. If each carrier screening indicates that both parents have an autosomal recessive gene for the same disorder, the parents may decide to have prenatal diagnostic testing. That is, the fetus may be tested for the disorder before birth. If the fetus has the disorder, treatment of the fetus may be possible or termination of the pregnancy may be considered. Few ethicists have a problem with prenatal genetic screening as long as abortion is a legally obtainable option. Prenatal detection of genetic disorders is accomplished mainly by amniocentesis. Chromosomal as well as biochemical tests can be run on the amniotic cells. The probability of risk to the fetus with this procedure is less than 0.5%. Amniocentesis is a prenatal test that allows a person and their practitioner to gather information about the baby's health and development from a sample of amniotic fluid. This is the fluid that surrounds the baby in the uterus. The test is most commonly done when a woman is between 15 and 20 weeks pregnant to determine whether the baby has genetic or chromosomal abnormalities. Other reasons that you may need to have amniocentesis include to check on the well-being of your baby if you have had a blood sensitization, such as Rh sensitization. This is a complex condition that can occur if your blood is a different type than your baby's. To determine whether your baby's lungs are mature enough for an early delivery if you appear to be in premature labor or require an early delivery for any reason. Amniocentesis can identify several hundred genetic disorders. An ultrasound, a combined first trimester screening, or a multiple marker test may indicate whether your baby is likely to have problems. But only amniocentesis can tell for sure. Only amniocentesis can provide the information needed to diagnose infants in the womb. Only about 5% will be found to have a baby with a problem. Before having an amnio, an ultrasound will measure the baby and check his basic anatomy. For the amnio itself, a doctor or technician uses ultrasound to pinpoint a pocket of amniotic fluid a safe distance from both the baby and the placenta. Then, under continuous ultrasound guidance, the doctor inserts a long, thin, hollow needle through the abdominal wall and into the sac of fluid around the baby. They will withdraw a small amount of amniotic fluid and then remove the needle. Withdrawing the fluid should take less than 30 seconds, and the baby will make more fluid to replace what was taken out. Another form of genetic testing is newborn screening. Newborns are tested because if problems are found early, serious problems like mental retardation or death can be prevented. Newborn screening is recognized as an essential preventative public health program for early identification of disorders in newborns that can affect their long-term health, according to the GenesRx website. Early detection, diagnosis, and treatment of certain genetic, metabolic, or infectious genital disorders can lead to significant reductions of death, disease, and associated disabilities. Education is a program responsibility along with counseling and provision of other ancillary services. The panel of newborn disorder screening varies from state to state, and decisions for adding or deleting tests involve many complex social, ethical, and political views. The main goals of genetic screening include medical management or treatment, the provision of reproductive information research, and enumeration. It prevents disease manifestation by helping patients cope with environmental conditions in the face of inadequate genetic endowment. DNA fingerprinting is a laboratory procedure. It's used to diagnose inherited disorders in both prenatal and newborn babies in hospitals around the world. In other programs, prospective parents use DNA fingerprint information in their decisions concerning affected pregnancies. This work is necessary for curing disorders. FBI and police labs around the U.S. have begun to use DNA fingerprints to link suspects to biological evidence, such as blood or semen stains, hair, or items of clothing found at the scene of a crime. Since in 1987, hundreds of cases have been decided with the assistance of DNA fingerprint evidence. And now I'll hand it over to Jonathan.
Okay. Here we go. Unlike the affirmative, we believe that genetic screening to produce genetically healthy or even designer babies will ultimately create more harm to society than good. The formation of a sort of utopia could prove to be extremely detrimental to humanity as we know it, and therefore we are opposed to genetic screening in all human beings. The affirmative's resolution actually makes the problem worse. This issue raises ethical and affirmative and moral issues as well as scientific uncertainty. Fetal genetic screening leads to a plethora of unforeseen problems with an increase in abortion rates, deformities, ambiguity due to flaws in genetic screening, as well as a serious moral postulation of how much is too much. Will one day humanity be at a point where we are all genetically modified and engineered people? The answer is yes. This could become if genetic screening is funded and allowed to develop. Already within the scope of genetic screening, testing, and treatment, we see a class of designer babies. Although many of us do not think of true designer babies in this light, no one is to say that there's a difference between a designer baby with blonde hair and blue eyes versus a designer baby without a certain genetic default. That is to say, even though some may think a superhuman race may be the natural evolution of the human race, there is no difference between producing these types of babies, which turn out perfect, and the types we produce today, which allegedly stop the formation of certain inherited genetic disorders. Biologist Stuart Newman and bioconservative activist Jeremy Rifkin dispute that since genetic engineering could lead to the manufacturing and enslavement of monsters such as human clones, designer babies, or human-animal hybrids, strict measures should be implemented to prevent these dehumanizing projects from ever happening, usually in the form of an international criminal ban on human genetic engineering. Even though laws are already in place to protect people from the horrors associated with genetic screening, they are vague and ambiguous, leaving room for the average people to become vulnerable and susceptible to major corporations as well as injustice. Aside from pre-fetal genetic screening, another grave dilemma arises. Post-fetal genetic screening will lead to discrimination and stigmatization against groups subject to genetic screening through unemployment, race, geographic location, insurance, sex, and education. We can already see from numerous case studies how worse off we are after the knowledge of these genetic complications. According to the California Supreme Court case Geller v., a child's insurance policy was dissolved after a diagnosis of an extremely rare genetic abnormality named mucopolysaccharidosis, or MPS. In this case, a threat of lawsuit forced the insurance agencies to reinstate the child's policy, but with the exemption of coverage of two common MPS-related complications. In several others, Billings 1, Alper 2, and Alper 3, courts all upheld the decision to deny individuals and their families any type of health insurance coverage due to a genetic disorder named hemochromatosis. According to the New York State Health Board, scientific evidence, including evidence from molecular genetics research, shows that genes may influence complex behavioral and cognitive traits in mental illness. Generally, however, behavioral and cognitive traits in mental illness result from a complex and cumulative interplay of many genetic and environmental factors. According to the board, even if genetic variants played a role in determining the person's predisposition to a disease, there are still remaining factors which could never be tested for, as well as an unaccounted for testing ability, confidentiality issues including protection, disclosing genetic information without the patient's consent, and the ability or lack thereof of the test to predict a disease, disease's severity, and the age of onset still occur, along with severe psychosocial hindrances in genetic screening of minors.
Being able to know if your unborn child is healthy and protected means the world to most expecting parents. To know if your child is developing properly and has no sign of defects would help parents rest assured. That's why a prenatal diagnosis is an important and very useful resource that should be shared with all expecting families. The main test is amniocentesis. It's used to diagnose chromosomal and genetic birth defects or certain other malformations. The procedure is often done in the second trimester, which is about 15 to 18 weeks of the last menstrual cycle. It's been offered because of maternal age. This is because the risk of bearing children at elder age can lead to chromosomal birth defects. The most common disorder is Down syndrome, which is a combination of mental and physical abnormalities, which is caused by an extra chromosome. Chances increase from 1 to 400 by the age of 35 and 1 to 100 by the age of 40. It is also offered to families who had a previous child or pregnancy with a birth defect. So if a couple already had a child with a pregnancy diagnosed with a chromosomal abnormality, this would be the best test. Another test would be the family history. Couples with families who have medical histories indicate that their children might have an increased risk of inheriting a genetic disorder. Amniocentesis can also determine severity of fetal anemia babies. The procedure includes inserting a thin hollow needle into the uterus and removing out some amniotic fluid surrounding the baby. The woman lies flat on her back and is set up for an ultrasound. This procedure is done to guide the needle through the abdomen and uterus into the amniotic sac. Since everything revolves around physics, the ultrasound is a way to form pictures to show sound waves. The equation for the ultrasound is T equals D over B, where T is in microseconds, V is the velocity, the speed of sound in human tissue, and D is the distance waves traveled in meters. The equation is used to plot a graph and reflect the pulse versus time. A pulse echo technique is used and set at a higher frequency when directed to the body. The pulse reflects the sort of interference that's found inside the body, such as a fetus. Ultrasound is known as the real time and are like movies. The pulse of an ultrasound is emitted by a transducer that changes the electric pulse to a sound wave. The detection of the reflected pulses by the same transducer are then displayed on screen. The time from the pulse is emitted when each echo is received proportional to the distance of the reflecting surface. After the sample is taken, the physician can use the ultrasound to check the fetal heartbeat to see if it's normal. Currently, physicians are able to diagnose many birth defects and are now advancing in prenatal therapy, which can make it possible to treat some birth defects before birth. An example of this would be biotin dependence. It's a life-threatening inherited disorder, which can be detected by amniocentesis and can be treated in the womb, which results in the birth of healthy babies. 95% of high-risk women who have parental diagnosis receive reassuring news that their underborn children do not have any disorders. The accuracy rate is about 99.4% to 100% in diagnosis of chromosomal abnormalities. Another prenatal test is chorionic sampling, CBS, which can also diagnose other birth defects. It's done earlier in the pregnancy, about 10 to 12 weeks, but appears to have a slight higher rate of miscarriage and other complications.
This is Tommy.
Hi, Tommy.
What the opposition is suggesting might help parents find out whether their children may be susceptible to future illnesses and may allow them time to treat it. But there are unseen consequences that will arise and ultimately outweigh the benefits. One of the consequences from genetic screening would be complications that arise from the resulting procedures in order to acquire samples of the fetus. There have been studies that show that ultrasound is harmful for babies, and the other procedure, amniocentesis, which involves a needle inserted through the mother's abdomen and into the amniotic sac to collect the amniotic fluid, which is then tested for genetic abnormalities. These complications include infection, vaginal leakage, spontaneous abortion, injury to the baby if it's contacted by the needle, and induced premature labor. Amniocentesis is currently only performed on women thought to be at higher risk of having a child with a birth defect, so they are willing to take the chance the possible risks involved with the procedure. But if genetic screening increases, then more and more women will subject themselves to this procedure without considering the complications that might arise because of it. One of the foreseeable consequences from dealing with genetic screening and the creation of designer babies is that once we've crossed that threshold of correcting genetic problems, is that we might take it too far and start correcting perfectly healthy babies. Once we begin destroying embryos because they are diseased, what would stop us from creating babies based on their physical and psychological traits? Also, when dealing with this subject, there's always the topic of eugenics, which is the practice of improving the human gene pool by removing undesirable genes. Once scientists begin selectively constructing the human gene pool, the results would be subject to unseen factors which would give scientists new powers to express their genetic preferences and stereotypes, thus encouraging many governments such as the United States and the European Union to create legislation that monitors this practice. And as a corollary, designer babies might also
race issues that affect our world economically. Like, insurance companies may refuse to cover a newborn with a condition that could have been corrected at birth, thus forcing parents to design their child. There is also a connected concern about transferring the process from procreation from the home to the lab and turning it into a manufacturing process. Another concern that is when scientists tamper with the human gene structure, they might create unpredictable consequences that may damage our gene pool and create new illnesses and diseases. Aside from the scientific dangers, there are also major social concerns that arise from genetically designing babies. Will these new technologies be only available to the rich? Will the creation of super babies create a society of segregation and prejudice towards the genetically inferior? And will the practice of eliminating embryos lead to an alarming increase in the abortion rate? The answer to these questions is yes. Designer babies will make all these factors a reality, and once this door has been opened, it will be impossible to close.
The Origin of Species, written by Charles Darwin in 1859, viewed a world in which genetics controlled us and not our environment. As we see in identical twins, which are basically clones, they lead different lives and don't have anything in common other than their genetic diversity. This means no matter what traits babies are given, they'll still be unique individuals. No one really knows what will happen with any of the tests that will be performed in the future.
My name is Greg, and I'm going to be talking about why genetic screening is good in newborn babies. I'm going to start by talking about old types of diagnosis, traditional types of diagnosis, and why the genetic screening is better. X-rays are recognized as electromagnetic radiation with a wavelength 10 to the negative 2 nanometers to 10 nanometers. This is the wavelength of light that is needed to pass through human tissue in order to image bone. Now, this is great if your baby has broken bones, but, you know, how often does that happen? And if you want to see more tissue, you can use computer tomography, or CT, they call it, to see some of the soft tissue in the body. And for imaging types of cancer, we can use nuclear medicine, which is basically dictated by the equation E equals MC squared. What else does this equation dictate? It dictates the particle decay in nuclear bombs. Do we really want to be subjecting our babies to the same type of particle decay that happens in nuclear bombs? I don't think so. So, I'm no mother of a newborn baby, and I can't really speak as if I was one, but I'm pretty sure that most mothers of newborn babies don't want to be giving levels of radiation to their baby. So what does all this have to do with the current topic? Well, not many of these imaging techniques can see what we're looking for in newborn babies. HBSS, HBSA, bio or biotinase deficiency, galactosemia, cystic fibrosis. What all these have in common? They're all genetic diseases. What else do they have in common? They're all biochemically activated. And what drives a biochemical reaction? Gibbs free energy, or the change in free energy. That's right, delta G equals delta H minus delta T S. Otherwise stated, the change in free energy is equal to the change in enthalpy of the system minus the temperature times the change in entropy of the system. Let's see, considering the changes in free energy drives these reactions and is directly proportional to thermodynamics, let's review a couple of things. The first law of thermodynamics states energy is conserved. The second law of thermodynamics states that reactions in the universe proceed in a direction that has to increase disorder or entropy. When we realize that we are dealing with laws that govern the universe, it becomes apparent that many of these diseases we might not be able to stop them. So what can we do? Why does any of this matter when we're considering genetic screening? Two words, early detection. According to the National Newborn Screening and Genetics Resource Center, It is the law to screen for the earlier mentioned diseases in newborns. There are slight variations in what is screened for from state to state, as these are state laws, but many of these diseases are seen for the most part across the nation. Unlike having to subject your baby to annoying levels of radiation, these screenings require nothing but a small prick to the baby's heel. Let me tell you, this isn't a new idea. Screening newborns for genetic diseases began over 35 years ago. Recent advancements involving DNA testing and mass spectrometry gives us much more accurate data than past methods. The isolation of macromolecules in their crystalline form with the help of X-ray diffraction can give us vital information about these diseases. Knowing the molecular form of the proteins involved is often extremely important in finding treatment. How can we find the shapes of these proteins? M lambda equals 2D sine theta. We just learned that. An interesting equation, but what does it tell us? M is an integer, lambda is the wavelength in the X-ray region, and we can use theta with theta, the angle the X-ray makes with the surface of the crystalline forms, to discover D, the distance between the atoms of these molecules. Further genetic screening will help us to decide what part of the DNA are actually being transcribed by these molecules. Knowing all this, the shapes of the protein and the part of DNA transcription can help us define cures. Now, many people out there will say genetic screening is bad. One of the main arguments that I found against genetic screening is that for adding stress to families who have incurable diseases that aren't expressed until adulthood. The Archives of Disease and Childhood Testing, October 2000 issue, states that in 37 countries, the majority of genetics, a survey of professionals in 37 countries by Wurtz revealed that the majority of genetics in Northwest Europe, the USA, and other English-speaking countries would refuse testing on adult-onset diseases. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I think this is absolutely crazy. Lack of knowledge takes away an individual's right not only to know that they have the disease, but also takes away the right to make informed decisions on whether or not they want to have children that may also have this disease. In addition to knowing about these diseases early on, it gives opportunity to research treatments and keep abreast of the research going on to find its cure. Let's see. Okay. The lack of conviction. Don't let the current lack of conviction about genetic screening take away people's hope for treatments of these diseases. The other thing I want to say is that hope is offered for people with these diseases. There may be new cures available soon. But people, how are families who have babies who are stricken with these diseases going to look for cures if they don't even know whether or not their baby has a disease? Knowledge is the only pathway to a cure. I beg of you. Ignorance is not bliss. Save the babies and embrace genetic screening.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Needle, and I'll be speaking about various negative aspects of genetic screening. Yes, it is true that the knowledge of a person's predisposition of acquiring a certain disease may prove useful. It could possibly save lives, but is it worth the risk? Although there are many risks, I have identified discrimination as the most important of them. Imagine, if you will, that you were told you are at high risk of acquiring a heart disorder in your later years. Is this information that you'd like your employer to have? The answer most certainly is no. An employer with this information in the end may decide not to risk employing a person with such high risk of missing work. Is it right that such a person lose their job for a disorder they may never contract? The answer, again, is no. This discrimination doesn't even end at work. Insurance companies have already begun a practice of discrimination. In fact, according to the National Academy of Sciences, this practice began as early as the 1970s. At this time, insurance companies began charging higher rates for African Americans who carried the gene for sickle cell anemia. Although it was made illegal to deny coverage based on genetic screening, it is still possible to charge higher rates. So where is the line drawn? Can insurance companies charge based on any identifiable disorder? Or can we demand that because no test is 100% accurate, that we have the right to equal rates? I will end my rebuttal by re-asking you a question. Is it right that anyone be discriminated against based on a disorder they may very well never contract? Every day, our understanding of the human genome is becoming more and more extensive. Spending almost $15 million on research, American scientists have now discovered 4,000 diseases of genetic origin. It is impossible to say that these developments are devoid of purpose, but it is also impossible to ignore the questions they raise. One of the most important is that of privacy. It is important to see the problems that arise concerning who has access to the information gathered by genetic screening and what the possibilities are they can do with it. Again, perhaps the most direct way privacy can be violated is exemplified by employment. Genetic testing and employment can be debilitating and is almost impossible to be prevented since it is done by independent sources. Even if the government is able to mandate this testing to be voluntary, will it truly ever be? Most of us do not have the luxury of picking and choosing our employer. For millions of Americans, it is difficult to find any type of employment, let alone one that will allow them to forego a test that could save their company millions of dollars. In 1980, an estimated 850,000 workdays were lost due to a worker being ill, and this number has grown larger since. This enormous loss of revenue is more than enough motivation for employers to use the information gathered by genetic screening. By seeing if an individual is at high risk of illness, employers violate our privacy. They should not have this right. The second most important invasion of privacy is committed by insurance companies. The American people today rely on insurance for almost every portion of their life, and genetic screening creates vast problems in disability, life, and medical insurance. These insurance agencies have access to individual medical records, and thus the ability to see their risk of contracting various diseases. These risks have meant higher insurance premiums since the 1970s, and this risk will continue to grow in upcoming years. People unfortunate enough to be at risk of a debilitating illness will be charged incredibly high rates. Is it right for this to happen since there is no guarantee that the disease will ever be contracted? Even the privacy of human reproduction is at risk. Not only is it an invasion of privacy to screen unborn children, but these tests will haunt later generations. Many tests today are mandatory in all 50 states, and the samples used for these tests are kept in the hospital for future study. Anyone who argues that these samples will not be used for anything unethical is flat out ignorant. Eugenics, or the study of hereditary improvement, has a very dark history in our country. At one time, 24 states had forced sterilization laws, and these views are still around. And a recent study by the Los Angeles Times showed that 63% of Americans supported forced sterilization of drug-using women of childbearing age. Giving the government the ability to see our quote-unquote sexual utility will most likely lead to a similar outcome. In the end, we must ask ourselves whether the simple ability to do something makes it right. With a close look, you will undoubtedly see the glaring flaws of genetic screening. Thank you.
Okay, this is Greg again with rebuttal. So you say that, you talk about these issues of privacy and say that, you know, if we have this information and we don't, and the fact that we're definitely going to use it for something unethical, and if we don't think so, we're ignorant. There's something called a Hippocratic Oath that all doctors take, and it basically is there to ensure that they don't use any of the information on patients for anything unethical. So I think there's a lot of physicians that would disagree. That it would definitely be used for something unethical. Another thing I want to talk about that you said is all the money lost by the companies due to workers being out because they're ill, and that they would want to use this genetic testing to see what illnesses the workers have. Those same workers, if they were to know the diseases that they had early on, such as the type of thing that genetic screening would give you the ability to do, would know about treatments that they might not otherwise know about, which might cause them to not be out and be ill, and they have these treatments which keep them from being ill. The third thing I want to address is the insurance they talk about. I think having to pay a lot more insurance is a much smaller issue than the ability to catch a disease early on. I'd say that far outweighs any money that you might have to spend. I know adding another 50 years onto somebody's life is probably more important to them than spending another $200 a year on insurance. In addition to that, a lot of times families, when they know early on about diseases, there's things that they, you know, if they didn't know about the disease that they might have, could be misdiagnosed. And I'm going to quote from the November 19th, 2003 issue of the Journal of American Medical Association. Within the first 6 months of life, 28% of children identified by newborn screening compared with 55% of clinically identified children required hospitalization. One child identified by newborn screening compared with 42% identified clinically performed in the range of mental retardation. Mothers in the screening group reported lower overall stress and prenatal stress index than mothers in the clinically identified groups. Children with false positive results compared with children with normal results were twice as likely to experience hospitalization. And mothers of children with false positive groups compared to mothers of children with normal screening results attained higher scores on the parental stress index. Basically, the short of this is saying that if we know about things ahead of time, everything's going to be a lot better.
Okay, I'm Ashley, and I'm talking about the forensic aspect of genetic screening when it comes to DNA fingerprinting. DNA fingerprinting is a process that finds patterns in DNA. Since no two individuals have the same pattern of DNA, this is imperative in criminal investigations. DNA fingerprinting is more reliable than eyewitness testimony. With eyewitness testimony, you only have a 50-50 chance of telling the truth, whether it's intentional or unintentional. DNA doesn't lie, since no two individuals have the same pattern of DNA. There are two methods in which DNA fingerprinting occurs. One is electrophoresis. DNA is taken from the cell or tissue of the body, such as blood tissue or hair, and restriction enzymes are used to cut the DNA. Each restriction enzyme used to cut the DNA is cut in a different pattern. For example, an enzyme BAM, HI, cuts a sequence of DNA in G, G, A, T, C, C. The way scientists are able to identify the individual's DNA from a sample is due to the length of the DNA fragments. Since this is what is different from other individuals. Then the numerous pieces of DNA are cut and sorted and passed through a gel-like substance called polymeric gel, which is transferred onto a nylon sheet. When it is placed on the sheet, an electric current is applied to the sheet. Since the DNA has a negative charge, it will move across the electric field to the positive side. The smaller DNA fragments in the gel will move faster through the gel's pores than the larger fragments, which will result in the smaller fragments being on one end and the other on one end of the other gel and the larger fragments on one end. The next day or so, a stain is applied to the separated fragments or probes, and it can be seen under UV light. There must be at least four or more probes to make a match. Another way that this test can be done, which is a fairly new method, is laser desorption mass spectrometer. A laser pulse is applied to a sample, which creates DNA ions. Ions are then accelerated by an electric field, and the ions go through a flight tube, which is then separated according to their masses once they go through the magnetic field. Once they pass through the magnetic field, the ions go through a detector for identification of weight of the DNA, which is calculated by measuring the time between the laser pulse and the DNA reaching the detector. Dr. John M. Butler from Gene Trace Systems states that the massive accuracy and precision are such that no sizing standards are needed to determine the sample size. Mass spectrometry is more accurate than electrophoresis and is even faster. The only reason it isn't used that often today is due to the high cost. So once the person's DNA is collected, it is entered into a CODIS, which is Combined DNA Index System. With this entire process of DNA fingerprinting and the CODIS, it has allowed many crimes to be solved. It has also cleared a lot of allegedly accused people of their crimes. Without DNA fingerprinting, none of this would be possible.
Hello, I'm Sasha. I'm giving the rebuttal to genetic screening of criminals. Genetic screening of criminals has been highly supported by the FBI and other government officials. With this information, they can require the screening of individuals who commit a crime, and their DNA and genetic information will be held for possible future identification. However, even those who commit minor crimes such as shoplifting will be required to be genetically screened. Also, crimes that have a low likelihood of being recommitted will require a screening. However, the American Civil Liberties Union states that, quote, the decision to undergo genetic screening is purely personal, and it should not be subject to control or compulsion by third parties or the government. So how is it that these people would be required, not even given the option, to be genetically screened? If there is government intervention, where will we draw the line, and how will the laws be interpreted? According to the Council for Responsible Genetics, there are several concerns for how to properly use the database that would hold the criminal genetic information. Among these concerns include, who will be required to be genetically screened? What will be the appropriate scope of database sampling? Will this include violent sex offenders to all convicted criminals, non-convicted arrestees, and even those who are simply accused? Because anyone must give their consent before being screened, does this mean law authorities will use this as a means of conviction? For example, a suspect who does not wish to be screened may be required to spend jail time until he or she does agree to the screening. These standards, quote, standards of consent for acquiring DNA from suspected or convicted criminals, is an important issue when discussing the law and convictions. And the third concern is, how will the DNA samples be used and who will have access to them? Our third point here, for our main point for our non-support of genetic screening. While genetic screening allows for recognition of an individual's predisposition to certain health problems, screening may actually raise some more important issues. Although screening recognizes these diseases, we still do not hold the cure for many of the health issues of today. For example, by telling someone that they are likely to develop cancer, this may be very detrimental psychologically as well as in other ways. According to the Centers for Disease Control, cystic fibrosis is the second most common life-shortening childhood-onset inherited disorder in the United States. Each year, approximately 1,000 persons in the United States receive a diagnosis of cystic fibrosis. Whether screening newborn infants for cystic fibrosis should be recommended on the basis of clinical benefit from early detection has long been the subject of debate and scientific investigation. Scientific evidence has shown that newborn screening for cystic fibrosis may not be as beneficial as once was thought. There are many negative aspects to the screening of newborns for this disease. The psychosocial risks of genetic screening are very high. According to the Centers for Disease Control, there are some important risk factors to take into mind. One of these is what they call false positives. This includes the unnecessary testing and treatment for a child who may be diagnosed with a disease such as cystic fibrosis. This causes intense anxiety for the parents, as well as desensitization of the providers who are caring for those with cystic fibrosis. The false negatives is another important risk to take into mind. This includes assuring the parents that their child is negative for a disease such as cystic fibrosis, when in reality they are being falsely reassured. Stigmatization is also an important factor. This may include discrimination from insurance providers and employers. Another important risk to take into mind is misinformation. Genetic screening is still a new process, and errors in communication or misunderstandings of results are very likely. Another important factor in newborn screening, however, is the possible negative side effects of therapies. According to the Centers for Disease Control, newborn babies are more at risk for developing resistance to drugs used to treat cystic fibrosis. As with any disease, babies are more likely to develop resistance, and this could likely lead to more deadly mutations of the disease. This will cause increasing difficulty in treating these diseases in the future and could possibly lead to a killer virus. These factors are all important when discussing genetic screening with newborns.
Okay, this is Ashley and Liz Brown-Little. With new technology advancing, such as the laser distortion mass spectrometry, scientists have been able to increase their accuracy in detecting both the mutation and deletion of cystic fibrosis. So the false positive factor has kind of slowly been eliminated from that. Also, the Human Genome Project was technology spreading therapy are happening quicker than originally thought, so we're not that far behind as you can see we are.
All right, I'm Courtney, giving my conclusion for the pro side of genetic screening. Genetic screening is a very beneficial and important test being done every day to improve the health of our children. Genetic screening can start with two prospective parents that want to have a child, but want to find out their chances, if any, of having a child with a disease. An extensive overview of each parent's family history is researched to see what kind of diseases the doctor may be looking for. After the doctor goes through each partner's family history, past and present, he or she will decide the chance, if any, that the couple will have a child born with the disease. So once the parents decide after this that they would like to proceed with having a child, an amniocentesis may be performed when the parents become pregnant. This test allows the doctor to test for a wide number of diseases. This test is optional, however. A great deal of important information may be taken from this test. It is a very common procedure that allows a couple to know how healthy their child will be born. If a disease is found in the fetus and is curable, the elimination of that disease may begin right away. If the disease is going to overtake the child and make the child's life miserable and in pain their entire life, the parents have the option of abortion if they do not want their child to suffer their entire life. Abortion is not necessary, but it is an option. When any child is born in the United States, he or she is required by law to be genetically screened. This allows the doctors to find out how long the child will be and if they will need medical assistance. Each state has its own required genetic test and is a very safe test to be done. The number one important thing to remember when genetic screening is the health of the child. This is the main purpose, is to have healthy babies born into this world. The Human Genome Project paved a huge pathway for the genetic screening. It began in the 1960s, but since the human genome was uncovered completely, it's possible to do a wide variety of tests, such as testing for metabolic or fatty acid disorders. This was a major discovery for humans because the genome has uncovered a lot of information and has answered many questions. Using DNA fingerprinting is a very important type of genetic screening that allows criminals and many investigators to find a suspect who has left DNA evidence at a crime scene. This has helped solve many cases. Genetic screening is a brilliant method that we use in society every day. It gives us the knowledge about how healthy our children will be born into this world or if they will carry a disease. If a child carries a disease, he or she can receive all the medical attention necessary to alleviate any ill suffering the child may be going through. Also, with genetic screening, currently there is no eugenics going on. It's just for prevention for the health of a child. There's no plan for eugenics to become, overcome the world at this point.
Jonathan, I'm giving my conclusion for my team. Now that you've heard the good, the bad, and the ugly aspects of genetic screening, you will be informed enough to make an educational decision on the resolution. Please make the correct choice and remember, despite what the opposition has given as meager evidence for their resolution, genetic screening starts off, like many things in life, as innocent and helpful, but only turns into a terrible and harmful medical technology, which will end up hurting the greater good of society. Hindering society with such relevancies as discrimination, new forms of genocide, an increase in abortion, and a decrease in help for those with genetically unfortunate backgrounds. Time is now to stand up and stop the praise and support for a potentially dehumanizing technique, which can only lead to a new class of humans. Not ones that you and I know, but a new class, which according to transhumanistic thought, are soulless or spirited machines. Remember that not every new medical technology turns out to be a helpful medical technology. Thank you.
All right. Now we will have questions from the audience. We have four members in the audience today. Tyler, you have the first question.
My question is, what are the benefits of knowing that you are about to give birth to a child with a handicap? Cheryl.
Being
able to know if your child is handicapped would help parents prepare for emotionally for the birth and to plan the delivery with their health care provider. Parents can also discuss their options with genetic counselors as well as health care providers. It would be less stressful for the mother during and after labor. And it also would prepare them for the transition with the mother and child. And most importantly, it would make sure that the baby is taken care of properly.
All right, Jen, next question.
Jonathan, I'm wondering if you found out that your wife was going to bear a child who had a debilitating disease, would you discuss abortion as an option with your family?
Yes, I would discuss it as an option with my family, but I would not, I don't believe that I would really stand for it, and I don't think my wife would either. I believe that it wouldn't be natural to know something like that in genetic screening, so no. I would not want abortion.
Got it. All right, Joaquin, next question.
My question is to Ashley. Did any of the information today strengthen or change your opinion on genetic screening?
I believe that it strengthened my decision on genetic screening for the simple fact that, say, I did have a child and there was something wrong with my child, I would want to detect it now if it could possibly be fixed or just, you know, be mentally prepare myself to deal with a child that has some type of disorder. And also, when it comes to the forensics aspect of it, if we didn't have DNA fingerprinting, people that have been released today from prisons who were wrongfully accused would have never been released. And that, to me, is very important.
All right, Linda, last question.
This question is for Sasha. Would you have your child genetically screened as a prenatal fetus?
I would not. Because in knowing these diseases or mutations that might occur with my child, if there were any, I think that with anyone there would be higher rates of abortion. And instead of parents just being able to cope with the problem, I think that they would do the wrong thing and just abort rather than prepare for having a child with a disability, which is doable, and we have, you know, good treatments for children, and if we can detect it early, if that, I think that that's an important thing, but then again, it will give people the chance to have abortions, which is a negative aspect of that. So hospitals are requiring newborn screening of babies, which I think is the best way to go if they are going to screen, just because it's something that they can treat then and there rather than just get rid of or abort the child.
All right, and this concludes our debate.